Good morning. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 90.29. We have got an exciting morning here in the studio. I have my special guest with us. We're just going to go ahead and get started.
Okay.
A very familiar voice. I've been here, I think Rick and I, we were trying to figure out the other day, maybe 3.5 years, going on my fourth year. Every Saturday after the outdoor show, I say to George, why don't you stay? And let's talk some radio. And so I was persistent, and 3.5 years later,
Here I am in all my radiant glory.
You finally wore him down.
That's
Thank
how
God
I do
it's
it.
Radio. Let's put it down.
Yeah. So never give up your dreams, folks. Just don't know when they'll come to fruition. Right. We've got Rick Allen on the board. How did he do this morning for you?
He did okay. Yeah. He only had one or two quiz questions, and he mumbled and fumbled around and got most of the answer.
Which is typical, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes he gets them right, and sometimes he doesn't. Okay, we're here, and we're talking about something a little different than you normally do on Saturday mornings. After the show, you and I usually have, what, 2 minutes, 3 minutes?
At the outside, yeah.
Right, to see each other, say hello, and you're passionate about something other than the outdoors.
Well, yeah.
Several things, but...
Yeah, yeah. Several things, yes.
So you know that I love to cook, I enjoy baking, and you have a passion for all sorts of different whole grains, artisan bread baking, things like that.
I don't know that I would go to the artisan extreme.
I know, but from the things you've told me, you're more of an expert than Rick and I at this.
What I've done for the last two and a half years is mill my own flour. And the difference between what's sitting there on the shelf in the grocery store, even if it's, you know, whole grain organic, and what it tastes like when it's made the same day the flour was milled, is the difference between a lightning bug and a lightning bolt. There's just no comparison when it comes to the flavor. And I think, of course, looking at me, you go, what can this guy tell me about nutrition? But I think it's far more nutritional than any product you're going to get in a grocery store. Now, I know, you know, you've got problems with gluten, but I don't. I got problems with gluttony, but not gluten.
They're both G words, but slightly different.
Yeah, slightly different.
When you first started grinding your own grains, and I was thinking this morning, before I found out that I was gluten intolerant, I used to go to some health food stores, and they would have mills there, and I would do some of the, I guess, red winter wheat or white winter wheat. So I did a little bit of that when I was able to do it, and we really enjoyed it. And it almost took a life of its own because we were using natural sourdough yeast starters, and you really have a baby that you're taking care of, and that it becomes itself. So I'm curious, why did you decide 2 years ago that you were going to start grinding your own grains?
I don't know that there was a specific trigger for it. I was making whole wheat bread, it was a mixture of. And this is off-the-shelf stuff at the grocery store. It was a mixture of whole wheat flour and bread flour and a little bit of sourdough. And then I would add in things like toasted wheat germ and milled flaxseed. And, you know, I'm going, why am I putting all these supplements in? Isn't there some way to, you know, avoid buying all this extra stuff? Because if you shop around and you look for it, you can get top quality wheat for bread making. I bought 50 pounds for $27 the other day. Now, that's that means you're turning out a loaf of top quality bread for a lot less than a buck. Find it on the shelf somewhere and see if you can. And started looking at the mills. And I think maybe part of the motivation was I was thinking in turn. I was thinking a little bit like a prepper. You know, what's going to happen if, boom, we, you don't, maybe don't remember it because you're so terribly young, but
thank you.
There were some god-awful blizzards in this area a few decades back, and at one point, you know, you spent a week in the house. You couldn't even get out to do anything, you know. And I thought, well, hey, maybe I need to make sure I've got the ability to maybe make some food items right there, and maybe I need to have a little more depth to my pantry than most people have these days. And so got to looking at the meals, and wasn't too crazy about most of them. But then I ran across one that would kind of fit in to everything. And it was, it's a mock mill. Okay, now, it's a real mill. The reason it's called a mock mill is it was designed by a German guy named Wolfgang Mack. And it fits as an accessory on a KitchenAid mixer.
Oh, wonderful.
You just use the powertrain output on that old KitchenAid, and it mills any grain, and it's a stone mill. In other words, there's a pretty wide range of milling types. There are what they call the impact mills and the micronizing mills. These both basically came into the consumer market from medicine and science. They were designed to make a very fine powder. Nutramil makes a micronizing mill. But it can't turn out a lot of different textures. You turn it on, it sounds like a jet engine.
And you get what you get.
And you get what you get. The stone mills that Mock Mill is making now, and they make three different mills now, other than the one I got for our KitchenAid, standalone mills. They're all stone mills, and they have a wide range of adjustment. In other words, you can make a very coarse meal. You can make a medium or meal. You can make a fine meal or coarse flour just by simply adjusting the distance between the stones. It's that simple. And that seemed to me to be one virtuous, because you could, you know, it wasn't a unitasker, as Alton likes to say. You could do a whole bunch of different things with it. I was desperate looking around trying to find grains, found them at some health food stores and stuff like that, but never could really find a good range of them. But even with the ones that were available to me, the difference in flavor, just incredible. I mean, once you've worked with freshly milled flour and your own bread, you will never buy anything in a little plastic bag again.
What are some of your favorite grains to use to grind?
Well, right now I'm working with rye, which basically I'm using for my starter. And it's incredible what rye, freshly milled rye, will do. There's a whole bunch of little microorganisms on each one of those grains, and they're just waiting for a chance to eat it up. You've got the lactobacillus, and then of course you got all of the fungi, the yeast, and a rye starter is the equivalent of a small hand grenade. I mean, You get it built up and going right away. It's not like trying to build a starter from store-bought flour. It's very vigorous and stays that way. Got a good flavor. I'm also working with oats. Not going into the bread, but found a good source of oat groats. And I make my own stone ground oatmeal.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Well, you know, you buy the oatmeal in the store, and it's not really meal. It is flaked oats. It's oat groats that have been steamed up or softened up by some process and then cranked flat. And they're partially cooked. By the time you get them home, you know, you've got 3 to 5 minutes of hot water. These Scottish oatmeal takes a long time to cook compared to Quaker or whatever kind you've been getting. And sort of evolved into that from trying the Irish oatmeal, the steel-cut oats, and pin or what they call pinhead or steel-cut oatmeal. And I got to thinking, that Burness stuff's expensive. I wonder what oats cost. Bingo. They're a heck of a lot cheaper. Now I'll take a cup of oat groats, toast them on the stove in a pan for a few minutes just to get them fragrant, let them cool down, and run them through a very coarse setting on the mock mill. Bingo, I've got a cup and a quarter of meal that cooks up in 20 minutes or so. And the flavor difference is incredible between it and oatmeal that came off the shelf and went home in a brown paper bag.
If we have listeners who are becoming inspired by listening to you today and they want to start making their own bread or their own oatmeal, where can people go to find resources for high-quality grains?
Well, there are a lot of online sources. The problem with the online sources is, shipping. Okay?
Yes. Yes.
That's the hard part. There's a company called Augustin Farms. They make a bunch of food products for preppers. Included in their line of products are some hard white and some hard red wheats. Whole wheat berries. In fact, if you type into a search engine whole wheat, you are not going to find what you're looking for. You need to type in wheat berries. Not wheat grains, but wheat berries, because that's how they're referred to. You can sometimes find the 26-pound pails at Walmart online. And then, bingo, you order. They're shipped to the Walmart nearest you. You go in and pick them up. That was one of the first things I worked with, were the Augustin Farms products. But part of what you're paying for is the fact they have been packaged to have a 30-year shelf life. Okay? They're packaged in food-grade pails with an oxygen absorber inside.
And you didn't need that.
I don't need that. No, I don't need that. Because I can buy oxygen absorbers and...
Yes, I've done that before. Mylar bags. You get the Mylar bags and the oxygen absorber.
I don't
absorber,
even
right.
bother with the Mylar because that 50 pounds of wheat that I bought the other day is a year's worth of bread.
Wow.
You know. And I'll be going through it fairly fast. It will go into food-grade pails with what's called a gamma lid. I don't know if you're familiar
no,
with
I'm
those.
Not.
All right. It is, instead of a lid that clamps on and has to be pried off, there is a ring that attaches to the pail, just like the regular pail lid would. But that ring is threaded, and the center portion of it is a screw-threaded, removable, replaceable lid. There's no, you know, struggling with a screwdriver or a claw hammer or one of the pail wrenches to get into it. You just unscrew, take what you need, screw the lid back on.
I could even do that.
Yes. Yeah. I think Rick probably with a, if he was well supervised, could do it too. You know,
with a little help.
Little help. And I can put it up with, you know, 25 pounds at a time or 20 pounds at a time, and put the oxygen absorber in there. It's going to take care of any little beasties that might have taken a ride in the wheat and keep the wheat nice and fresh.
Let's go back to red wheat and white wheat. What are the differences in flavor, texture? Do you prefer one? Do you like to blend them? How does it work?
All of the above.
Okay. Yes, we'll start at the very beginning.
There are, wheat is classed, first of all, as hard wheat or soft wheat. The hard wheat has a higher protein content, and that's what makes gluten. There are two proteins in the wheat, glutenin and gliadin. Moisture comes along. They chain themselves together in big, long molecules. And then those molecules, you have the ability to overlay one group over another, and that's what the kneading does. And it creates a film in there that can trap and hold any gases that are produced by chemical leavening or by bacterial leavening or sourdough or yeast or whatever. And that's what makes the bread rise and gives it the texture that it has. The soft wheats have a lower protein content. You can make breads from them. Generally a chemically leavened bread, soda bread, biscuits, pancakes, that sort of thing. Then there are a whole bunch of different kinds of wheat. Most commonly, the ones we encounter here in this country are red and white. The red is, well, redder than the white. Believe it or not, the red wheat, a wheat berry, a grain of wheat, has got three basic constituents. You've got the bran. That's a hard shell that encompasses what's called the germ. That's the little itty-bitty, teeny-weeny, baby-wavy plant. And the endosperm, which is the food that the plant is going to use when it sprouts, when it begins to grow, before it can produce its own and draw nutrients from, you know, the ground it's planted in. See, the bran in hard red wheat has perhaps a slightly more bitter taste. There's more tannin in it, which if you've trying to think of a common product that's you'd run across tannin. Yes, excellent, very good.
He's paying attention.
He didn't even have to take out his microphone at number 1 to 400.
I know.
He doesn't.
About his third hour in, he starts getting into it.
Hey, Rick.
I said wine, by the way.
Yes, you know. I know. Whap. Do you know what that was?
No.
That was the sound of a little gold star going up by your
right.
All right.
I got one.
Yeah, you got one. Tannin in red wines. Okay. Hard white wheats or white wheats have much less tannin, much less Well, I wouldn't say much less. Less bitterness. Some people don't like commercial whole wheat bread. Most of it is made with the hard red wheats. And they, you know, they don't like the flavor or taste of it. But really, with freshly milled flour from hard red or from hard white, it's so much better.
I think we have a caller on the line. Tim, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Good morning. Thanks for calling in and listening to the show. Do you have a question or a comment for George?
But yeah, there is a place for getting mills around here, within 100 miles. It's a place called Meadows Mills over in Wilkesboro, North Carolina. They make sawmills, but they also make stone mills for grinding wheat, and they come in various sizes and obviously various price tags. Those things are not cheap.
No.
They'll do anywhere from a few pounds a minute to a few bags of wheat berries a minute, you know, just depending on the size and how much you want to pay for them. I know they still make them. When I used to work there a few years ago, they were making them for the Amish. So,
well, thank you, Tim, for the information.
And once again, where is the company located? I think you said Wilkesboro, North Carolina.
Yes, it's in Wilkesboro, North Carolina. It's called Meadows Mills. Meadows Mills. They're a great big. It's a large, red brick building. You can't miss it if you. Just Google it. You'll be able to Google it or use your GPS, and you'll be able to find it. They're right on the main drag in Wilkesboro.
Okay. Now, do they make sizes that are appropriate for, you know, a household of one or two or four people, or are they targeting a larger?
I don't know if they make them that small. Like I say, it depends on how much you want to spend.
Mm-hmm.
They make hammer mills, too. You were talking about the impact type?
Right.
They make hammer mills for various things.
Oh,
Like I said, they can process anywhere from a few pounds a minute to a few bags a minute.
Wow. Yeah. Their mills look like they're more or less designed for commercial or small community use.
I don't know if they've gotten smaller. You can, have you got to their website?
Yes,
I just pulled it up, Tim.
Okay. That should give you pretty much a rundown of their catalogs and all that, of what they make.
When
I was there, I worked as a welder on some of their sawmills.
Ah, so they make all kinds of mills.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us, Tim, and for listening to the show. If you'd like to check out, it's meadowmills.com. You can look at what they offer. It would be neat to have a community group that could go in together and invest in.
Yeah. Now, he was saying they make the mills for the Amish. Would you check the description on that and see what the stones are made from?
Balfour pink granite in a solid piece.
Okay. Now, most of the stone mills that are targeted to a commercial or to a consumer household use a composite stone. In other words, they take basically carborundum, glue it together, and that's what the stones are made from. The pink granite stones, of course, are very close to what was used for ages and ages. The big difference between the type of mill that I'm talking about, that I have, and the stone mills is those stones have to be dressed every so often. They wear and lose their effectiveness, so you need to have someone who can dress the stone or be trained to do that yourself. Most of the composition stones are not a big problem. You know, they just wear.
Okay, we need to take a quick news break. Can you stay with us a little longer?
All right, but I'll need more money.
I wish I could help you with that. I wish I could help all of us with that. Okay, we'll be back here in just a few minutes. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday Mornings, WFHG 92.9. Welcome back. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9, 75 degrees here in Bristol, Virginia. And I've got my special guest back with us, George Grant, from the Outdoor Show on Saturday mornings.
Yeah, here I am, still indoors.
I'm so glad you decided to stay. You're giving lots of information about...
I'm having fun.
Good, yeah. Good. That's the big thing. We're just having fun.
Mm. He's like, now there are some considerations before you dash out and buy a mill.
Okay.
To take into account.
Now you did say during the commercial break there was a way that I could exercise before I bake bread.
They make some quote unquote hand powered mills that you crank yourself, and there are even one or two out there that can be hooked up to a bicycle if that's the way you want them.
There's only one problem. I can't ride a bicycle.
Well, you're not going to have to.
Is it a stationary bicycle?
It's a stationary
bicycle. Okay, good. I'm good.
Yeah. You don't want to be, you know, running around through the neighborhood.
Well, I didn't know. Yeah. You know, critters on the trail.
No, it's stationary. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I digress. So when we are looking for a mill, you talked about the stone mills versus the steel mills, impact mills. Mm-hmm. Are there certain things that we can use on, let's say, a steel or an impact mill that we would not be able to use on a stone, certain grains? Or how
on
does that work?
Stone burrs, you need to make sure you're milling a non-oily substance. That takes out of the equation your ability to mill nuts. Most of them have high oil content. You need to make sure that the product you're milling is no more than 12% moisture, as a general rule, because the oils and or the moisture will accumulate on the stones, glaze the stones, and kind of make them ineffective. They can be cleaned fairly easily by milling a hard, dry grain very coarsely through them, but that's a pain in and of itself, and if you're just careful of what you use in the mill, you don't have to worry about it. Now, the steel burrs, on the other hand, you can mill coffee. You can make your own peanut butter. You can make your own masa for tortillas, however you want to go with the steel burrs. Impact mills, I don't think you're going to enjoy trying to mill anything other than grains, hard, dry grains in them.
So it really just depends on your projected uses and what mm-hmm. fits for you depending on what type of mill you select.
Yeah. There's one hand mill out there that comes with both stone and steel burrs. It's called the Wonder Mill Junior. The main Wonder Mills are electronic impact mills. The Wonder Mill Junior is you hand crank it, or you buy a wheel that mounts on the shaft that's got a big groove in it, and then you can hook up your bicycle.
Perfect. Lots of options.
Or an
to
electric
power
motor, however you want to go. And it can you can use it to make peanut butter, grind nixtamalized corn for making masa, whatever you want to do, or if you're going to work with dried grains, hard grains, you just put the stone burrs in and grind that.
So where do you find your recipes? Are you at the point now where you're developing your own? How does that work, or do you have recommendations for our listeners?
There's a couple of two or three books out there that go with the concept of home milling. One of them is by a lady named Sue Becker. She's got Bread Becker's in Atlanta. It's a family business. They sell the grains. It's called The Essential Home Ground Flour Book. It's got a bunch of recipes in it for all the different grains that you can be working with. Then there's the book by Erin Alderson, and she deals with a much wider range of grains than Becker does. But basically where you find your recipes, you can find them online. There are a couple of fairly well-known websites. Breadtopia is one. All one word.
Okay, I'm writing this down.
Write that down.
Okay, I got it.
There's The Fresh Loaf.
All one word.
No.
Okay, I've got that as well. We'll share these with our listeners after the show.
And just type in Google. Whole milled flour. There's probably a dozen websites that will deal with it. One thing you can do is take a recipe designed for commercial flour and translate it into home milled flour. There will be some changes. First of all, in most cases, home milled flour is fairly thirsty. In other words, you're going to need a higher hydration for the dough than you might need for commercial product.
When we think about adding more moisture, that could be water, that could be egg, that could be oil. Or what do you recommend?
Water, milk, scalded milk. You've got hydration. There's always a ratio of hydration to flour. There's what's called a baker's formula for bread, and it's based on percentages. It is the percentage of the weight of other ingredients to the weight of the flour that's in the bread.
So are you, when I first started my home-based bakery for Gluten-Free Guru, I ended up weighing the flour, and I realized that you can make a cup of flour weigh anything you want.
Grams are the only way to go.
Okay.
Much as I hate to, a gram is 1/1000th of a kilo.
Okay, so that's important, because
and
if not,
a kilo is 2.2 pounds, more or less.
So intelligent, Rick.
Not really.
In front of
no.
you, I feel stupider by the minute. Stupider, even word.
I am a hardcore English measurements guy. I like feet. I like inches. I like L's. I like rods. I like cubits. I like spans. It was quite a strain on me to go with that French stuff.
But the bread was so delicious.
Yeah.
You were converted.
Well, you're usually working with such small quantities that, gram is an excellent way to measure it rather than volume. Now, that's a problem with some of the books I was telling you about. One of them works with the traditional cups and teaspoons and tablespoons measurements. And that's fine, but there's, like you've realized, there's a world of difference between a cup of sifted flour and a cup of scooped flour. There's going to be a big weight difference. There's going to be a big weight difference between pink Himalayan salt, a teaspoon, and extra fine kosher or table salt. So, you've got those things. Usually with a minor ingredient, you can work with traditional measures. But when it comes to your majors, like your flour and your hydration, whether it is water or milk or whatever, buttermilk, whatever you're using, you really need to be a lot more precise. Salt you kind of want to make sure that it doesn't, it isn't more than 1.8% of the weight of the flour. Not the total weight of the loaf when it's finished, but the weight of the flour. That's what a baker's formula, baker's ratio is. For example, I make a 500-gram flour loaf. It's made this way. I take 200 grams of a rye starter. My rye starter is 100% hydration. In other words, in that 200 grams of rye starter, there's 100 grams of rye flour and 100 grams of water. I then take 400 grams of hard white, hard red, whatever, or a combination of them. All right, now that means I have in my bread at that point 500 grams of flour. The 400 that I just milled and the 100 that was in the starter. It also means I've got 100 grams of water at that point. I want a little over 70% hydration. So how much water do I need to get there?
Rick's the one who always guesses. Go ahead, Rick.
200 grams of water.
You were close, but you were shy. I had 500 grams of flour. I have 100 grams of water in the starter.
Right.
How much water do I need to get to 70%?
I can't do that kind of math in my head.
Nah.
Okay, go ahead and tell us.
Well, here's the way you do the math. Okay. You want 70% of the total weight of the flour that's in the bread in your hydration. So 500 times 0.7 is 350. I've got 100 of it, 250 grams of water.
Okay.
Now, that could vary a little bit. I mean, depending on what kind of day it is. You know, maybe this batch of flour isn't quite as thirsty as the next. So I always say, you know, for this recipe, I go plus or minus 250 grams.
And you know by looking at it if you need to add a little bit more or not.
Yeah, the texture of the dough, the performance of the dough will give you a good idea. There are some other things that you do when you're, depending on how you're making the bread. I mean, you know, if you got a bread machine over there, you just throw it in and walk away. But there's a process called autolysis, where you put the flour and the water together and just let it sit. You're wanting to make sure that the flour is absorbing all the moisture it can get and beginning the initial formation of, in my case, gluten, and being ready to, you know, be turned into a bread dough.
Okay. I just have to know, do you bake bread every day?
No.
Once a week?
6 to 7 days, a loaf every 6 to 7 days.
Okay. What about your wife? Does she participate in the grinding bread baking process, or did she just sit back and say, that's my man, I'm waiting for the bread to come out?
Well, years ago, she used to make all the bread, and she was making it from, you know, the store-bought products, and then we both got kind of busy, and we weren't making our own bread, and then I more or less retired and got interested in, you know, making my own bread, and it slowly evolved from store-bought products to producing my own. So I do most of the baking, but she's still at work, you know, while that's going on.
That seems like a good fit.
It works.
And then she gets to enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Yes.
When did you get started in radio? How long have you been in radio?
Let's see. The easiest way to date it is with the one of the major events that I covered. Are you familiar with the Moses coming down off Mount?
I am, yes.
I would say 1969. Okay.
1969. And how did you get started in radio? Was it just something that you wanted to do?
Not that... really.
And here, he's still here.
Yeah. But your sins always catch you out, so...
I don't even know how to follow that.
I was over at ETSU. A friend of mine was working for the campus radio station, WETS. And this was before it was actually broadcast. This was over the wiring in the dorms.
Wow.
And he said, you know, you might be okay for radio. They put me on air, and then I got a part-time job, and I don't want to go into it. It's too painful.
Well, I didn't want to get personal, but we are talking about breaking bread here. So
I haven't always been in radio. Let's put it that way.
But you loved it enough that you've come back to it.
Yes. Or have been content. Never mind.
I want to go back to the flower for just a second.
Okay.
As I understood, flour was always supposed to be measured sifted. And
yeah.
Okay. Is there a difference between the measurement of sifted flour or sifted store-bought flour and your milled flour? If they're both...
If I measure by weight, no.
Okay.
Why you need to do it?
That's why you do it by weight. That's why you use grams, because they're more precise than ounces or pounds.
Right.
It doesn't matter what size cup you're using. Okay, you measure it by weight. Bingo. You've got it right if you've got the weight right.
Okay.
Because some people don't realize that there are dry cup measurements and there are liquid, wet cup measurements.
Yeah. Fluid measurements,
A dry cup and a wet cup are two different sizes.
Two different things, yeah.
Yeah.
And then people get discouraged sometimes because their products don't turn out. And
don't take this up if you're easily discouraged, because you will, you know. Experience is what teaches you to recognize a mistake the second time you make it. Okay, that's the definition of experience. You will turn out bricks, you know, and I like to refer to it as biblical bread.
There you go.
It's bricks made without straw. Okay.
So, are there other things that you'd like to share with our listeners about grinding your own grains, mills?
Take a look at the different types of mills that are out there. Decide which one you think fits you. Find some good reviews. Find some good information. Breadtopia, that website, they have got some pretty good analyses of the different mills that are out there. Take a look around at your sources for grain. Like I said, I just was so happy I found a wonderful source for grains. It's the Mountain View Country Market down in Chucky, Tennessee. And they've got all kinds of stuff. They've got spelt. They've got hard red, hard white, soft wheat, oat groats, buckwheat, which
is not it does not have gluten.
It does not have gluten, and it ain't even a wheat.
That's right. to confuse us even further.
Even further. They seem to have a very wide selection of products that people who are going to take food preparation from the most basic state to finished product. You know, they've got all kinds of things that you're going to need if you're going to be cooking.
Now, let's go back to your starter.
Okay.
We'll start at the very beginning. do you share your starter with people? How do you get...
Cross my palm with silver. I'll be glad to share it. Okay?
That's so generous.
It's a rye-based starter, so that shouldn't give you any problems at all if you want it.
Well, and there are some people who say that once certain grains are fermented and they go through that breakdown stage, that there is less gluten. And so I do know people that make their breads and things with spelt, and when you're using a starter like that, it makes the bread more digestible.
Well, it makes, whether it affects the gluten or not, it does make bread more digestible. There are, and this is, I'm not absolutely sure that I want to believe everything I'm told. For example, I'm old enough to remember when eggs were bad for you, and then eggs were good for you, and now they're bad for you again. So, you know, I'm at that point in life.
Go what works
but
for you.
There are some products in freshly milled grains, some acids, that seem to block the absorption of some nutrients. And supposedly, the addition of, say, ascorbic acid, or the acids that are present in a sourdough, take care of this phytic acid or whatever it is. I don't know. I don't think I'm suffering nutritionally because I keep having to buy bigger pants.
It's an art and a science.
It's an art and a science.
Delicious art.
I think the first time you try it, what most people do, they'll do what I did. They use commercial flours as training wheels. Okay, we'll use 200 grams of bread flour, and then we'll use the rest of my grind. Okay, fine. That works fine. But sooner or later...
But eventually you have to take off the training wheels and go for it.
Sooner or later you go, yeah, let's do the whole darn thing, start to finish. It's not that complicated. If Neanderthals could do it, you can too.
Yep, that sums it up.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us.
It's been a pleasure, Christy.
An extra hour anytime. I could have you every week, and we'd have a blast, and I would learn so much. So it's been an honor to have you here.
You might learn some things that you
I wish I had
don't want to do.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's a good thing we've got news coming up here in just a couple minutes. We'll put all these resources on my Facebook page so people can get that information.
And especially that Mountain View Country Market down in Chuckee, Tennessee. It's on Highway 107. Can't miss it.
Sounds
well,
like a field
miss
trip.
It because I missed it the first time I went down.
Yeah, I have no sense of direction, though. I can barely make it to the station. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday Mornings, WFHG 92.9.